As we continue our study of Genesis, we now come to the origins of Islam. I can't cover everything about Islam in one sermon, so this will be a short series within a series. Let's read now from Genesis 16, 11, and 12. "And the angel also said, 'You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son.'" He's speaking to Hagar. "You are to name him Ishmael, which means God hears. For the Lord has heard your cry of distress. This son of yours will be a wild man, as untamed as a wild donkey. He will raise his fist against everyone, and everyone will be against him. Yes, he will live in open hostility against all his relatives." Ishmael was Abraham's oldest son, and he was born by his wife's slave girl. The name Ishmael exists in various ancient Semitic cultures. It is a name that was used early in Babylonian history. It has been translated as "God has heard." According to Genesis, Ishmael died at the age of 137. Historically, Judaism has regarded Ishmael as wicked. According to historical writings, Ishmael was an idolater and a brother hater. It is said that he became ill when Sarah gave him the evil eye. The evil eye is something people give each other by sending a bad thought their way. Jewish tradition says that that is what Sarah did. Ishmael is said to have had two wives named Aisha and Fatima. Aisha and Fatima are also the names of Muhammad's wife and daughter. This is considered to be a key link between Islam and Ishmael. The Jews regard the freedom-loving, bellicose descendants of Ishmael as inferior because Abraham kicked Hagar out with her son. In Jewish thought, Abraham wouldn't have kicked them out if they weren't inferior. Both Judaism and Christianity say Isaac is the father of the Jewish people. Ishmael is the father of the Arab people. According to Muslim tradition, Muhammad was a descendant of Ishmael through his son Kedar. The New Testament offers Ishmael as a symbol of the rejected way of thinking, or the law. Isaac is offered as a symbol of the new way, which is Christianity. Muslims have a very positive view of Ishmael, giving him a larger and more significant role than Isaac. Isaac is both beloved by Christianity and Judaism. The Quran teaches that Ishmael was a prophet and the real son that Abraham was supposed to have sacrificed instead of Isaac. We can only imagine how the ill will between Sarah and Hagar had a bad or a negative effect on Ishmael. It framed his view of Isaac from the get-go. It's not a leap in credibility to think that Ishmael was told repeatedly that his half-brother was God's choice, and by inference, you're not. He'd been told that Isaac was the better of the two. He was told that Isaac was the legitimate heir. When Ishmael and Hagar were sent away by Abraham to fend for themselves, the sense of abandonment likely made for feelings of despair and bitterness. Ishmael, being the unworthy outcast, developed a resentment so strong that it infiltrated into his descendants. In other words, it became genetic. The descendants of Ishmael grew into the family of nations that God promised Hagar. To this day, the descendants of Ishmael fight against the descendants of Isaac. During the 7th century, Muhammad, who is the most famous descendant of Ishmael, tried to convert the Jews in the Medina area. The Jews refused to be converted. They rejected Muhammad as a prophet, and rightly so. They also began to influence other Muslims against Muhammad. They accurately charged Muhammad with corrupting Hebrew scriptures as he penned the Quran. That ancient hostility that began with Ishmael reignited, and Muhammad declared open war on the Jews. All those old feelings of resentment were rekindled. The armies of Islam embarked on an era of conquest that eventually took them all the way to eastern France. They maintained and fed fierce hostility toward the Jews. Then something unimaginable happened that opened another powder keg. In 1948, the Jews began coming back to Israel It was the land that God had promised Abraham so long ago. This land had been mostly abandoned for nearly 2,000 years. Now it is the most hotly contested piece of real estate in the world. It had been Muslim land, and now it is being given back to their sworn enemies, the Jews. It struck at the heart of what Muhammad himself taught about this land. He said that any land that was conquered in the name of Allah would never again be lost to infidels. But they were losing the land to the infidels, and it would never do. By this time, Ishmael's bloodline had become so diluted that the majority of Muslims weren't actually related to Ishmael anymore. Today, they are Iranians, Egyptians, Iraqis, and Syrians. Their historical hatred of the Jews has been kept alive by the religion they all share in common. By this time, most of the returning Jews weren't from the original 12 tribes either, but they were mostly of European descent. Only a small number of today's Jews can trace their ancestry to Jacob's 12 sons. What that all means is the wars today aren't really between Ishmaelites and Israelites, two families. The war is between Muslims and Jews, two religions. These warring factions may or may not be genetically related to Ishmael or Isaac. That family feud that began with Sarah's nutty plan has become a vicious battle of religions. Sometimes we call it a holy war. The question that the fighters are trying to answer is, will Jehovah God prevail or will Allah? Jews and Muslims will duke it out to the end of time to have this question settled once and for all. Many people believe that Christians and Muslims worship the same God. You might even hear some Bible teachers claim that they do. But there is some pretty good research supporting the idea that they are not the same God. And I don't believe that Jehovah God and Allah are the same God. The number one reason I lean toward the different gods theory is based on the opinion of Arab Jews or Arab Christians. Bible translators have run into a lot of trouble with Arab Christians because they translated Bibles into Arabic using the word Allah. Then they wonder why Arab Christians won't read those Bibles. It's because Arab Christians know that Allah is not the same as Jehovah God. History and archaeology give me more reasons to lean toward the different gods theory. Archaeology reveals that Allah was worshipped as a pagan moon god long before Muhammad came on the scene. The descendants of Ishmael worshipped all kinds of gods in the desert. A large population of them were worshipping the moon god named Alat, A-L-L-A-T. The worshippers were called the daughters or the children of Allah. Scholars have found that the worship of the moon god was always the dominant religion of the Middle East. The moon god was worshipped in many of the same ways that Allah is worshipped today. Those who worshipped the moon god prayed toward Mecca several times a day. Those who worshipped the moon god made a pilgrimage to Mecca. Those who worshipped the moon god fasted, just like Muslims do today. The symbol of the moon god of the past still lives on mosques, hats, flags, rugs, and jewelry. It's the crescent moon. We all recognize it. This crescent moon is the same ancient symbol of the moon god. In answering the age-old assumption that the Bible God and the Quran God are one and the same, we need to contrast the description of Allah and Yahweh. It becomes obvious when we do this that two different persons are being spoken about. Allah ordered his followers to kill those who deny Islam, while God orders his followers to love their enemies. Allah had no son, while God sent his one and only son to die for our sins. Allah is unknowable, the Quran teaches, while the Bible teaches God seeks a personal relationship with us. In our culture, it has become enormously popular to say that Christianity is the only true religion. One of the major issues people have with Christianity is they think we're conceited. An often asked question is, How come you guys think you're right and everybody else is wrong? Non-Christian people think it's religious snobbery to say that Jesus is the only way to be made right with God. People today believe that religious beliefs is a preference thing. Whichever one makes you happy, or whichever one gives you the most peace. Religion has become very subjective. People think that saying, I believe Muhammad, or I believe in Jesus, is the same as saying, well, I like tangerines, or I like oranges. They're both orange-like fruit, right? Christianity and Islam are both religions, so they're both the same. So it doesn't matter which one you pick. Oh, but it does. Many people might say that all religions are the same thing. There is no disputing the fact that there are common moral truths taught in the world's four major religions. As Christians, we know that this moral law comes from God Himself, who is the moral lawgiver. Romans 2:14 and 15. Even Gentiles who do not have God's written law show that they know His law when they instinctively obey it, even without having heard it. They demonstrate that God's law is written in their hearts, for their own conscience and thoughts either accuse them or tell them they are doing right. The Bible is teaching us that everyone has God's moral laws written on their hearts. It's not surprising, then, that we find a common theme running through the Christian edicts and the laws of other religions. For instance, the Bible and the Quran definitely have some common themes, and I'm going to show you some. Exodus 23, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Quran 47:17, know therefore that there is no one but God. Exodus 27, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Quran 2:224, do not use God's name in your oaths. Exodus 20:13, thou shalt not kill. Quran 17:33, and do not take any human being's life that God willed to be sacred. There are many other matchups just like that in the Bible and the Quran. In fact, all of the world's major religions share many of these common themes: Jews, Christians, Muslims, and Buddhists. Those are the four major world religions. All of us in those four world religions know the right thing to do, but history tells us we haven't done them. We can't live up to what is right. All of us have a problem, and every single one of us need God's help. As such, we need to focus on a bigger question, not which religion is right and which one is wrong, but rather who is right and who is wrong. The Bible teaches us that every single one of us on this planet are wrong and God is right. The Bible teaches us that every single one of us have turned from God and gone our own way. All the major religions may say the same thing about moral laws, but they do not say God is right. Some claim man is right. Their feelings are right. Their leaders are right. But many of them do not say the same thing about God and His solution to the human sin problem. Today, more than ever before, we must have a Christian response to Islam or the sons of Ishmael. To start with, we must be humble. Our response should not be governed by our ignorance. A lot of times I hear people talk and I think, close your mouth, your ignorance is falling out. And this is what I mean by this, especially the humility part and the ignorance part. Not all Arabs are Muslims. I made this mistake during my tenure at Wheaton Wesleyan. Long time ago, an Egyptian mother and her son began to come to church shortly after 9/11. I assumed that they were Muslims. After all, what else could you be if you come from the Middle East? I also assumed that since they were coming to a Christian church, they must have converted to Christianity. So I asked the son, whose name is Hani, if they had been Muslims before. Oi! I stepped into it that day. This brought on an onslaught of conversation in Arabic between Hani and his mother, Amal. Pretty soon, Amal came up to me and begged me to believe that they had never, ever been Muslims. Because many of us ignorant Americans just assumed that they were Muslim, Hani had the worst time getting a job in this country. Point of fact, the Binyamin family immigrated to America to escape the anti-Christian persecution that exists in Egypt. Did you know that? In Egypt, Christians are persecuted. While I'm speaking, you're not allowed to be a Christian in Egypt. We don't hear that on the news, but you're not. And many of them will escape to America so they can live. I thank God that the Binyamins became very dear friends of mine in spite of my stupidity. And in the end, I became their number one reference for jobs. Our response needs to be educated. Muslims have no respect for those who speak for or against something that they don't know anything about, and rightly so. I would suggest that we learn some of the rudiments of Islam. I'm sure you've all heard of the five pillars of Islam, but do you know what they are? We probably should, given the fact that we have a lot of Islamic neighbors. Muslims live and die by these five pillars. The first one is a profession of faith. The second one is ritual prayer. The third one is charitable giving. The fourth one is fasting. And the fifth one is a pilgrimage to Mecca. Now, this pilgrimage to Mecca, you only have to do once in your lifetime. The best Christian response shows up in the way we live our lives. 1 Timothy 2:2-3. Live peaceful and quiet lives marked by godliness and dignity. This is good and pleases God our Savior. Muslims have no respect for a faith that is weak and compromises with the world. Muslims are very critical of American immorality, and rightly so. Muslims have been disgusted by the American culture with good cause. We would do well to admit that many Christians do not even try to meet God's holy standards. And Muslims are very critical of us. Are they wrong? We must be patient, kind, and respectful when we come into contact with Muslims. 1 Peter 3:15, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect. Well, why should we be respectful to Muslims? Because we are not called to make enemies with others. We are called to make disciples out of them. It's good to know certain facts about Islam. Here's one. Initially, Muhammad wanted to be on friendly terms with the Jews and with Christians. I wonder what would happen in a conversation between a Christian and a Muslim if we brought that out. Did you know that Muhammad wanted to be friends with Christians and Jews, but each religion kind of stuck their tongue out at him? Pointing out the similarity between our moral laws is a really good way to talk to a Muslim. Muslims really only believe that Jesus was a prophet, but we can capitalize on their view that Jesus wasn't just a prophet, he was a very good one. Muslims especially like Jesus' teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. They agree with everything Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount. That's another good way to talk to Muslims. And we might, if we are living a wholesome life, capitalize on Islamic teachings against unholiness. Now, forming a response doesn't mean that we have to become little Christian pantywaists. We must be firm in our position that Jesus is the Christ. We must be firm in our stance that there is only one God, and he is Jehovah God. He trumps all of the other gods. We must know our scriptures well because Muslims, too, will quote from the Bible. It's always a nightmare when a Muslim can outquote you from the Bible. Today, we have come almost full circle from the Genesis account of Ishmael. Ishmael, who is represented by the Muslims, is older, bigger, and stronger. Isaac, who is represented by the Jews, is still the son of promise. But we know whatever people are, Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Jesus Christ died for every single one of them. We must never lose sight of this fact. Salvation isn't just for North Americans or Europeans. It is also for Middle Easterners. It is for all. The Bible tells us that every people group will be represented in heaven. Revelation 5:9. And they sang a new song with these words, "You are worthy to take the scroll and break its seals and open it, for you were slaughtered, and your blood has ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation." Let us begin to see the sons of Ishmael in this light. Let us begin to see the sons of Ishmael through the eyes of heaven.